Welcome to the Casual Fridays REI podcast, where you'll learn about the wildly profitable niche of land investing. Active land investors Adam Southey and Justin Sliva are here to share their experiences with you so that you can learn how to build massive cash flow and huge profits from this highly lucrative niche. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Adam Southey and Justin Sliva.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm Adam Southey here with my co-host, Justin Sliva, and this is the Casual Fridays REI podcast. Today, we've got the one and only, the RE tipster, Seth Williams on the show. We're so excited to have him. Before we get this interview popping, though, let's talk about the Plum Investment Group. Guys, do you have a property you need funding for? Plum Investment Group is your solution. Plum helps land investors grow their business by funding your raw land purchase. It's truly an awesome deal, guys, and just to be clear, this isn't a loan. Plum will actually partner with you by putting up the money for your project. So do yourself a favor. Go check out the website. It's www.pluminvestmentgroup.com.
It's a huge day today. We've got Seth Williams from the RE Tipster.
I can barely contain myself.
I'm a fanboy here. I look at two blogs, real estate related, and Seth happens to be one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, this is big. Yeah. We have made the big time now. The RE Tipster is on the show.
I'm loving it. Seth, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm kind of feeling like a fangirl right now, too. I know there's a lot of people in the RE Tipster community that talk about your stuff all the time. So, and I've listened to a handful of episodes, too, and I think you guys are doing a great job. So, yeah, happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, yeah. So, kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, Seth, for our audience.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm a land investor, a real estate investor. I've been doing it for about a decade or so now. And I got started with the land business specifically back in like late 2008. And it was, it was kind of out of necessity. I had tried a handful of other real estate investing things and I was just terrible at all of it. Like I was not doing well. I was could not find deals. I couldn't put anything together. And it wasn't until I found land that it's like, yes, like something actually works. I can actually get results.
Yeah.
But, you know, after the first few years of running the business, I realized probably kind of like you guys, you know, I had learned a thing or two and kind of had this little library of working knowledge in my mind. And maybe I could just kind of put some of it out there and help other people. And over the years, it's been a ton of fun to put that kind of content together and interact with people in, you know, in the blogosphere and in the YouTube channel and all that stuff. And yeah, it's just been a lot of fun to, compile what I know and help other people with the things that I've been able to figure out. So,
man, that's great. I remember Adam used to, at first when we were starting our real estate journey about our real estate journey in land about 3 years ago, he'd be like, hey, did you see Seth's blog? Did you see the RE Tipster? And I'm like, so I'm subscribing. And it was the first actual real estate blog I subscribed to. And then he constantly is always like, hey, did you see what Seth was talking about? You had a question about a coffee farm, didn't you, Adam?
Yeah, if you would jump right into that.
I know I'm kind of bouncing over the place, but, you know, it's been a little bit.
That's awesome. I really appreciate you guys saying that and just following along for all these years. It's super rewarding to hear that people care about what I put out there, especially guys like you that have such a cool thing going on. So thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, no, I definitely think what you have is very cool. I mean, and I like that you're very well-rounded. I like the coffee farm. That's one thing that's really been an interest of me, but also self-storage. I know you've kind of been diving into that too, but can you talk about the coffee farm at all? Like you actually bought into one, right?
Yeah. So there's basically a company called International Coffee Farms, and they operate out of Panama and Belize. And in Belize, they actually do cacao farms. So it's like chocolate, basically, the main ingredient in that. But you can buy into either a cacao farm or a coffee farm. The cacao farm's a little bit more expensive. Last I heard, the price was like $24,000 and some change for a half acre parcel of that. Oh, wow. And then the coffee farm, back when I got my parcel, it was $18,900.
Okay.
So there's it's kind of interesting. Like there's some sort of pros and cons depending on how you look at it. Because like first of all, you can't get financing for this. Like you have to have all the cash. And so that's kind of a downer. Something not a lot of people are used to. But the cool thing about it is, you know, we're talking about coffee and not just coffee, but it's something that there's always a demand for and the demand exceeds the supply. And it's also based in Panama. So it's something that like just completely disconnected from the U.S. real estate market. Like if things tank here, it's okay because you have something that operates totally independent of that in Panama. And you know, you can go and visit the thing if you want to. If you want to go check out your parcel that you own and drink coffee that was grown on your land, you can do that. I've not done that yet, but someday probably. But yeah, and I think the projections that they put together are based on like historical farms in the area and that kind of thing. They've been growing coffee in Panama since like the beginning of time, so they understand pretty well what they can expect, what kind of crop yield they're going to get. But it's basically somewhere around a 12% average return over the course of 20 years. So like the first few years, you're going to get like no money out of it. It's not going to produce anything because there's just little, you know, seedlings that they're planting on the land. There's not a whole lot going on. It takes a few years for it to actually start producing a harvest. And yeah, and then once it does, it sort of slowly picks up. And I think by the end of the 20-year projection time span, it's like a 20% return. So when you average it all out, it's about 12%. So, but I liked it just because, I mean, it's like a totally hands-off thing. Like, I don't have to do anything at all. And I don't have to put in more money. It's not like there's future capital calls or anything like that. It's just a nice hands-free investment. And that's the kind of thing I need in my life right now. Things that do not require more time from me. So I don't know about you guys, but
yeah.
Yeah, it was just it was a nice value proposition. I don't know that I'm going to like throw my life savings into this because you know, who knows? What if it just doesn't turn out the way I expect or something goes wrong? You know, it's tough to say, but I think just as a diversification tool, it's not a bad way to take some of your nest egg and put it somewhere else.
Yeah. So what did your wife say when you told her you're buying a coffee farm in Panama? My wife would look at me like I was crazy. She already does like 90% of the time. But like, what did she say when you said, like, hey, babe, I bought a coffee farm in Panama?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what her reaction was. I don't remember it being like violent or anything like that. Okay. Sometimes it is. Sometimes she punches me, but this time she did not.
Same.
Yeah. Well, actually, I do remember I actually wanted to take some money that I had in a old simple IRA from my employer from years ago and like take that money out and put it into another parcel. And she's like, why don't we just wait a few years before you do that? Like, let's just see where this goes. And then maybe. So she's not like totally all in, but you know, she's okay with me playing around a little bit.
Okay, cool.
That's cool. The whole idea of that thing is so amazing to me. And you're the only person I know that's ever done it. So that was, I just really wanted to hear it from someone who'd done it because it's so cool.
Yep. And it's different. Speaking of different, what's the favorite real estate deal you've ever done?
Yeah. You know, the one that I, you know, I've talked about this one a lot just because it was like a really cool deal. But there was one back in like 2011. It was my first really big deal where it was a 12-acre parcel of land on Lake Huron with about 500 feet of beachfront, you know, lake frontage on it. And I bought the thing for about $4,500 and I sold it a few months later for $45,000.
Wow.
And a lot of things are cool about this because first of all, you know, back in 2011 in Michigan, I mean, there was like no worse place to be. I mean, nobody wanted to be in this state. The economy was horrible. People were like, get me out of here. And the idea of, you know, buying land anywhere was just crazy. But it worked out really well and I was able to get it for super cheap. And I mean, if I had kept the thing until today, I mean, I probably could have sold it for like a couple hundred grand kind of thing. But, you know, in the moment, like, I don't know when this recession is going to end. I don't know what's going to happen. And $45,000 is still a pretty good win. So
yeah,
just kind of got rid of the thing as soon as I can. But yeah, it was really cool because that was also the first deal I ever did where I did not drive out to see it in person for the first, you know, a few years of doing this. I had spent a lot of time. I just had this like comfort issue where I felt like I needed to see the thing before I could own it. And to this day, I've never seen the property. But once I got through that whole process, I was like, hey, if I can do this here, like, why do I ever need to do it to see a property again? You know, it was just like a big light bulb moment for me.
Yeah, I've got a partner I'm working with, and he's traditionally was a house investor. And we're doing a deal in Virginia. He's like, oh, we got to fly up. We're buying 220 acres in Virginia. Oh, wow. And he's like, we need to fly up and go take a look at it. We can fly the drone over it. And I was like, why? We don't. That's it. In every land deal we've done together, he's always wanted to go to it because we've primarily his business is set up in North Texas. And so this is the first one out of state that he's done with me. And he's like, he's getting nervous. And I'm telling him, no, don't book the plane ticket. We're going to hire a drone pilot. He's going to go out there. It'll be fine. And so that is going to be a fun change for him. And I'm glad that you probably share that sentiment since you came from trying to do the houses before and the duplexes and multifamily.
That's one of my favorite things about the land business is that you don't have to ever go see anything. Like when I'm talking to people about what we do, I'm saying, you know, I own land in 7 different states. I've never been to any of it and I don't plan on it.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know if it's just land investor group or whatever, but everyone's so good about finding tools, building tools, doing whatever to automate this stuff and make it to where you can just work wherever as long as you got the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Have you guys, I know, Adam, you just said you've never been to any of your properties. Justin, have you guys ever done that? Like gone out and seen it just for kicks or?
He hasn't been to some of the ones that he's purchased. He's gone on some adventures with me. My first mailer that I sent out was 2016, 2017 ish. I bought like 17 properties in Brewster County. Mm-hmm. And so we drove 9 hours down to Brewster County. We didn't know that we should download the Google Maps on our phone before we got there. We knew I would take a couple guns with us because we're going to be out in the middle of nowhere, a couple gallons of water. And then we drove around for probably 12 hours looking at random pieces of property that we thought could have been mine, but we weren't sure. And then we did a day trip up to the mountains of the Ouachita Mountains in Oklahoma when we bought some property up there. And I had gotten stuck on the side of a mountain in a two-wheel drive Jeep. So we took his dad's Jeep Wrangler back up there and their dog. And we just went up there and had a fun time in the mountains looking around at stuff, the properties we had contracts on. So yeah, we've gone and see a few of them, but, and then we did Arkansas together. We had some deals in Arkansas come back, and it was luckily we went into that one because Google showed an 80-acre property we got back that was full of timber. Well, the lady said, I had some timber cut off of it. No, they clean cut the whole 80 acres. And luckily we went out there and looked at it because we were like, oh yeah, it's a great deal. Went out there, it's clear cut and it's not picked up. It's bad looking. And we were able to not do that deal. Mm-hmm. So we have seen a few of them, but typically we don't go see them. That's not part of our normal MO.
Yeah. You know, that's a funny thing. Like I firmly believe like it's not necessary to do that. Like it's been years since I've seen any of mine, but the weird thing is, like back when I used to do that, I think like almost every single time when I actually got there and saw it with my own eyes, I was sort of like, oh, so that's what it looks like. I somehow pictured it differently in my mind than what it actually looked like on site. So yeah. Like, it's not like there's no value in that, but it's just like, I don't think it's worth it, you know, especially if it's like hours and hours away. So I don't know. It's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah, you should have seen Justin's face when we were driving out to Brewster County because he had already purchased all the land. And as we're getting closer to Brewster, he's like, man, I don't know if this is what it looks like.
And then after being out there, I was like, yep, I wouldn't let my kids walk around out here. There's something that's going to bite them out of the bushes.
I thought he was playing a joke on me because he booked a place for us to stay at the Terralingua Ranch.
Lodge there?
Lodge, yeah. It's 12 miles down a dirt road. I was like, man, I know I haven't made him angry lately. Man. Drive me out here, leave me in the
desert.
In the desert. But that place is something else.
So with the type of properties you shop for now, what's a typical property type that you like for your inventory now?
Yeah, you know, I'm really kind of going after stuff that, I mean, preferably the bigger fish.
Okay.
Meaning like, you know, 10 to 20 grand or more in terms of like profit. Like that's what I can actually make on the deal. It doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes I'll go after ones thinking it will make that much and it doesn't actually. But yeah, it's really... And it's mainly because of time constraints right now. Like I don't have a ton of time to get lost in the weeds on a bunch of stuff. And I realize there's ways to be a lot more efficient than I am in terms of getting virtual assistants involved and all that. But yeah, it's kind of thing where I try to just make sure the deals that I'm working on are the kind that will give me a lot of valuable experience and also the kinds that are going to make enough money to sort of make it worth my while.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny when you start like, you get all this knowledge, you want to start expanding things, and then you just start running out of time to do everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we kind of feel that too. So it's having NDAs and whatnot to help us out. But
totally.
So as you continue with this and RE Tipster grows, do you have like somewhere you want to take it? Do you have plans for it in the next 5 years?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I sit down with Jaron. I work with him on the blog, and we have these kind of brainstorming sessions, and I don't know exactly. I've never been good at making like 5-year plans, but okay. I would love to find ways of like getting the community more involved, like not having it just be the stuff that we write and just the videos that we make, but almost creating more of a platform where other people can write stuff, you know, whether it's a forum or, you know, giving users their own blogs and that kind of thing. I don't know exactly how that looks, but I feel like the nice thing about it only being a few people that are writing the content is that it's really easy to control the quality. Like I can make sure that anything that goes out there, like, it's at least not crazy, you know, like there's something, some kind of legitimacy to what's being said. And that's kind of the downside is when you start letting anybody and everybody chime in, it's kind of harder to control the conversation and where things go. So, but I do sort of feel like we could do a better job of getting the community more involved with the content creation process somehow. So yeah, I'd like to see it go in that direction in some way.
Yeah. And we've discussed that with our stuff is when we set up as a media company, our idea was like, if you have people that specialize in certain niches or things like that, have them come on and, you know, use the platform to bounce off of, and do they really grow their business and their name and their brand from there? You know, if it's a guy that specializes in, let's call it subdividing, mm-hmm. he can put out his book or his ebook and things like that, because a lot of people don't understand how to put that process together, how to yeah. launch a blog, you know, how to do a podcast, and you can help people grow their brand by doing that. And, you know, it helps grow your brand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. What else?
I could talk all day to him, so I'm trying not to run too long on this. So looking at getting the community more involved, looking at stuff that you make $10,000 to $20,000 on for your land deals, is there anything non-land related right now that you're working in the real estate market that you want to talk about or bring up?
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I've owned a couple of duplexes for a while, and actually just sold one of those for a pretty good profit. It was
I saw you frowning about that.
Yeah, that's right. I was being sarcastic, if you couldn't tell. Yeah, it was kind of a weird thing. Like, I didn't mind owning them at all. Like, it was mm-hmm. they weren't causing me problems. I had a great property manager on top of it. But it was one of those things, you know, I think it's Warren Buffett who says to be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And mm-hmm. it's one of those times, I don't know where the top of the market is, but like, people are paying crazy prices for rental properties in my market. Like, they're overpaying. They're not good yep. deals. They're just like buying it because, I don't know, that's what people think they're supposed to do right now. So yeah, it's just that kind of environment. So, you know, I had bought this thing for, I think it was $49,000, and sold it for $165,000. Wow. And the thing sold in like less than 24 hours. It was like gone.
Wow.
And it's just, I don't know, it's part of me is like, it's kind of sad to see it go, but the other part of me is like, it's hard to not see this as a win, you know? Like,
yeah,
this is
yeah.
pretty good profit to make on that. So,
yeah. I was thinking, man, I got a good duplex story too, but he totally just trumped.
Yeah.
What was yours?
I mean, Justin wholesaled me a duplex, and I think I held on to it for 9 months. So it actually worked out really well because I somehow finagled my way through the bank where I got a line of credit. I didn't have to make a single payment on it. It was one payment a year.
Mm-hmm.
I got $2,000 a month cash flow while I had it. And then I flipped it for $35,000 profit, and it sold in 24 hours.
Yeah. Cool, man. That's awesome.
It was actually bought off a blind offer that we did. We ran a marketing campaign on that, and I've done it three times. My third one just went out, and we're just starting getting responses from that. But I did a second one up in the Pacific Northwest, and we bought two duplexes up there, and they sold first day on the market, one for $50,000 profit. So we bought it, brought an inventory, and the guy sold it. And then they have another one that's under contract to sell as well. And they're selling within these both have 60-day due diligence periods, and they have renters that are fully done. So mm-hmm. using that methodology that we kind of put together for this, we've done that. And that one was part of five that we bought out of an 800 mailer mm-hmm. blind offer campaign that we
did.
Man,
that's awesome. That's a great response rate. We're excited to hear from that.
A little bit different than, you know, kind of taking the blind offer method that we use for land and then move it into multifamily and saying, hey, we're get past the holding hands. Let me go take the apartment owner to golf or buy him coffee every day mm-hmm. for a month to see if he's interested in possibly wanting to sell. We're saying, hey, we can close in cash. This is how we do it. Mm-hmm. These are our terms. If you don't like them, let's adjust them. Give me a call and we'll talk. And then typically yeah. like, hell, I'm not going to pay you that, but this is what I'll take for it. Mm-hmm. And you start the negotiation process. You get in the inspection period. Now you've got rent rolls, contracts, and you can look at everything and you make a really good fair market offer.
Yeah. So was your purchase price, did it end up being like half of market value or like how?
No. So I'd given you the percentage. So I use a tax assessor market value and then offer a percentage mm-hmm. of that. So it probably works out to the high 60, low 70% of market value. Okay. And then they come back and adjust up from there.
Sure. All right.
So it gives me a good different number to work with. So and it's worked in three different markets so far. The market campaign that just started hitting last week ended up being a half a duplex that actually got mailed. They called back and said, I have five houses. Here's their information. We want to sell five of them. So we made an offer back on that. So we're waiting to hear back from there.
How do you guys pick which markets to do that in? Like, is it because you know these areas or did you look at some data to decide?
Typically, if it's a building, I want to see it. I want to put my hands on it and walk it. The area in the Pacific Northwest, I had an investor there that said, mm-hmm. hey, we heard you mention this one time on a podcast. Is this a real thing?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just do a campaign for us? We'll pay you to do the campaign and then we'll go out and do it. And they got a bunch back and a couple of them, he's like, you know, we probably should have bought them, but we kind of held back. They had a 20 unit, 11 unit, ended up buying a couple duplexes, and they were going to make pretty decent money off of it in a couple days. So it worked out. And then the same in the campaign for that we sent out this last week was another investor. He's like, hey, you mentioned this before. Can we work together and do this? And he actually drove up because it's outside of Austin. So he drove up to Fort Worth and spent the day with me. And we busted out the campaign in about 2.5 hours, went and had lunch with Adam. And he kind of got the full day experience. And then now here we are. He's sitting with property in his lap. And he's like, wow, this really works. So
that's pretty awesome, man. That's really cool.
Yep. I kind of feel like when we pick an area, we just say, you know, it'd be cool to own something there. Let's do that. And that's really what it boils down to.
Yeah. I don't necessarily agree with that, but okay.
We had just interviewed a guy named Mike Wagner on our podcast. He's a self-storage guy. And that was one of the things he said that kind of surprised me, because I was asking him, like, how do you decide where you go and buy these self-storage facilities? And he's like, well, you know, I like to take my kids to Disney World, so thought I'd try to buy one around Orlando. And I've got friends in North Carolina, so I bought one in that town. It's like, can you just do this anywhere? Like, you don't have to look at any like pre-existing data. You just kind of go where it's convenient. And it sounds like you can. So I guess there's probably deals everywhere.
Yeah.
I agree with that comment you just said. There's deals everywhere. And I think a lot of times, and we talk about analysis paralysis, but we overthink it. And we think that there's some rhyme or reason. Really, when we're offering money out there for whatever asset class it is, we're looking for a situation to buy and hope that it's enough money to get them to call us back. And it makes sense for us on the profit side. So I agree with that. I think we could shotgun the whole country and we're going to get deals back in every market, not just because of where it is. It's just the situations there.
Yeah. Have you guys ever found markets that were just like not good? Like it was either really hard to find deals or really hard to get them sold, or do you pretty much do well everywhere you go?
I mean, I've obviously mailed some places where the people hated me and would, you know, rather tie me up behind the truck than sell me their property. But that's about.
I've had a couple areas that just didn't sell well. Maybe I was priced too high, or it was saturated. Like, and I always talk about Lake County, Oregon was one for me that it's worked by a ton of investors, but I just couldn't get the right vibe in the groove. I ended up buying 3 properties. I had like 71 come back. And so I knew I offered too much. Bought 3 of them sold, 1 of them sold on terms, and it just came back. And so I got it back on the market again. But, you know, that was one of the areas for me. But for the most part, I've been able to, if it sits for longer than 90 days, I go and have a dump plan. And I'm like, okay, hey, I'm going to mark it up 20 or 30% and just dump it and move on, because I don't want money sitting in a no-win situation. So
yeah, totally.
So it's been, I don't know how your land business has been doing. For us, it's been kind of picking up here over the last 60 days. It's been getting a little crazy around here.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said about understanding like the general desirability of an area. Like if it's a place where there's tourism, and if there's a place where the population is growing and building is happening, it's not that you can't succeed in places where that doesn't exist. But I know, like, just my experience in Michigan, it's always been kind of like a state. Like it's not amazing, but it's not bad. Like there's just kind of somewhere in the middle. And I don't know, it's always sort of felt like it's a little harder to sell them around here as opposed to some of the other places in the country. And I mean, I don't know what the formula is, if there even is one, because like you said, maybe there's just over analysis of things. But it does sort of seem like if you can just sort of be fishing in a pond where like a lot of people want to be there, it's probably going to be a slightly, you know, more of a downhill ride in terms of getting the thing sold.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And kind of find it, you know, proximity to the major metropolitan areas. Price tends to do a lot, because I like to stick a certain size recreational property, 10 acres and above. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, there's a couple things that seem to correlate, but I'm not going to say it's the magic formula. It's if I buy it at this price, if I buy it, and we always talk 10 and 30. So if I buy it for 10 and I know the market value is 30, typically it's going to move pretty quick. Somebody's going to come in and offer me 22,000, 25,000, and it'll go. And I can look at every one of my deals I've done this year, and they all line up pretty close to that. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, well, if you're making $15,000 a deal and you're using a land agent or a real estate agent, or you're flat listing it and you're just kind of fielding a few calls and you do 10 or 20 of those a year, you're having a pretty good year with very little stress. You don't have to build this big mechanism, big machine that's always churning out deals.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Adam, you got anything else, Warren?
No. I think this was been good. I've been really, really happy to have you on.
Seth, you want to plug your stuff real quick? Let our listeners know who you are if they don't already know who you are.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, the main kind of home base on the internet is just retipster.com, RE for real estate. And sometimes I wish I chose a different name, because I can't tell you how many people think it's REI tipster, or they think it's pronounced retipster, which I can't blame them. It looks like that. But retipster.com, that's where our blog is. And, you know, that's kind of where you can find podcast stuff and YouTube channel stuff, and pretty much all the stuff that we have to offer is right there. So, yeah, but appreciate you guys having me on. It's been great to talk to you. Keep up the good work with what you're doing, and yeah.
All right. Yeah, guys, listen to them. Go out there, find them, give them a like, give them a follow, then go find us on Casual Fridays. Like, give us a like, give us a follow, then go find both of us, RE Tipster and Casual Fridays, on iTunes and Stitcher, wherever else you're listening to us, YouTube. Like, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. We appreciate it. We love you. We'll see you Friday.
See you Friday, guys.